Nick, good morning.
G'day, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Nice and sunny in Hobart, finally. So.
Oh, is it? How lucky. Now, Nick, a pretty obvious first question from us here. What got you so deep into the field of history at such a young age?
Lunacy, perhaps? I don't know. It's kind of innate, I suppose, that I've always had an interest in history. I was a dinosaur nut as a kid. Well, I still am a dinosaur nut. I spent a lot of my childhood digging up my parents' backyard looking for treasure. So it was just a natural progression, really. I don't think I've ever grown up, in a way, which is probably why I'm still doing things that we do as children anyway. It's one of those things we tend to grow out of and then come back to later in life, and I've just never grown out of it.
Still digging up the parents' lawn, huh?
Yeah. Well, there used to be a kind of a dump in a block below us. And I'd jump the fence and I'd go down and dig around there and pull out the rusty metal and broken glass and stuff. My parents must have been horrified that I was going to give myself some nasty disease or tetanus or something. But I spent a lot of time doing that.
Well, I'm glad you're still around. That sounds a little bit dangerous. We all did that when we were kids. Now, Nick, you've covered some really interesting topics regarding Australia's history in your work. Can you tell us a little bit more about what led you to these areas of study?
Yeah, okay. So my technical background, so I went off to university and studied history and really got into medieval history, and then went off and did a PhD in late medieval, early modern English vagrancy law, which is highly specific but not very marketable. And so as I finished and started to look around at what else to do, I really got interested by that point in Australian history in a more meaningful way. So the first big book that I did in that field was Kin, where I used my family story to tell the story of Australia's history. So it was a kind of a personal way of getting into Australian history. And then from that, I've then leapfrogged through bigger questions in Australian history. So 1787, which followed, was about looking at Australia before the moment of British colonisation formally took place in 1788, getting beyond those sorts of big nation-building narratives. And then with the Vandemonian War, that's grown out of the fact that I'm in Tasmania, have been very interested in frontier conflict generally and Tasmanian history, and uncovered a big cache of evidence basically that enabled me to tell the history of the war in Tasmania in a much more detailed way than has been done previously.
Right, that's really interesting. And what are some of the challenges of presenting history to a broad audience?
There's lots of dangers, really. There's the fact that people are often approaching you without any kind of knowledge already, on the one hand. So a big part of the audience is those who don't really know, and so they want to know. And you've got to speak to them in a way that's not constantly correcting preconceptions. But on the other hand, you have those people who have well-formed ideas of what they think Australian history is like, and so they already have preconceptions, and you have to gently push those aside. And so I've found, as a writer, it's a constant battle between presenting a clear, clean narrative for the person new to the topic, as well as providing a corrective process for those who might already know a little bit more and may have misconceptions that you gently need to correct. So those two segments of the audience are probably the hardest things to balance, and that's not even counting, you know, other historians who are very difficult to write for, and family historians, for instance. You know, there's a range of people who come to your books for a range of reasons. So trying to balance those, I suppose, is the hardest point. And choosing what stories to tell and what to leave out to do that when history is so rich with material is a really difficult exercise.
Right, it must be very difficult to please everyone. Now, if you've just tuned into The Daily, we're speaking with historian and author Nick Brody ahead of his appearance at the Sydney Writers' Festival next month. Now, Nick, you have a big presence at the Sydney Writers' Festival this year as a presenter at three different sessions. Are you finding that there's a growing interest in the past?
Yeah, I certainly think so. I think Australian history is going through a little bit of a renaissance after a number of years in the desert, so to speak. I grew up in that period when the history wars were at their height, and so history in Australia was very political and was often too political, and it drove people away, and myself included, in that respect. But as that has waned and it's got a little bit less political, perhaps, and people have got into the nitty-gritty and the interesting stories, there's a lot coming out about Australia's past that is genuinely interesting people. It's tapping into, is right in the back of a number of other international phenomena, you know, with the massive interest in family history is a big one. Reportedly, the most common sites on the internet after porn are family history sites. I don't know how true that is, but it's certainly something that's out there in a big way. There's also a wealth of people interested in local history generally, so knowing the history of their towns or their house, and you can see that in the kind of TV shows that we all watch and documentaries and so on. And so I think there's a real thirst out there for good history generally, and Australia's riding that wave.
Right, yeah, and like all the history that I learnt in high school, I kindly vaguely know, but I know what I've learned's probably been warped and misrepresented in my own mind.
Yeah, I tend to think of it as like how I learnt Japanese in high school. I can introduce myself very well in Japanese, and I can read katakana in terms of the characters, but I have no idea what the words meant. So it's a repetitive process where each year we seem to learn the same thing. So we learned the settlement narrative, and we did the First Fleet again and again, and we did the Anzacs and Gallipoli again and again, and we never really got like beyond those stories. And I think that effectively bored a couple of generations away from Australian history in the normal sort of way that often happens with school. You know, we don't all do calculus for fun.
Yeah, no, it's really important to just keep learning constantly. Now, you're going to talk about the need for millennial historians at the festival. What would you say to a young person considering becoming a historian?
Try and inherit a lot of money first would be my advice.
I wish.
History is not a terribly lucrative field, but it's certainly a very interesting one. It depends what people want to do with history. So there's a lot of work out there, for instance, in the heritage field. So if you want to specialise in archaeology or heritage surveys, those sorts of things, then there's plenty of work available. There's certainly a great need for more enthusiastic history teaching throughout the country. So those people who are interested in becoming teachers and history teachers in particular. So it's not like everybody needs to run off and write books in a way, but a whole generation needs to become more historically conscious and historically literate in general, not just in terms of knowing what happened, but also knowing about how to go find the answers to what happened. I think that there is a bit of a generation gap in the research and writing of history. I feel it acutely. I'm often the only person on a panel, you know, watch Transformers and would know their names, sort of thing. So being able to understand what a large segment of the population thinks, what their cultural positioning is really important. And so that would be the biggest advice that I would give for historians, future historians, is if you're interested in history, don't become that guy at the university who's still dressing like it was, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, move with the times, stay on top of things. And I think that's something where younger millennial historians are a bit more conscious of, perhaps, than older ones who really went through an older phase of teaching and the way of doing history, which pretended that it was almost eternal and timeless.
It's like you said, it's in need of a renaissance of historians. Nick, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, welcome.